And we will swing back around and tell more about some of the events going on in town later on in our show after we talk a bit more about the Long Bridge Swim. And again, we have in the studio with us the race director, Jim Zuberbühler. Jim, thanks again for being here. The swim is Saturday, August 5th, and maybe somebody listening out there may not be acquainted with what the Long Bridge Swim is. So can you give us the short version of what is the Long Bridge Swim?
It's a swim across the lake, and as the name implies, it's right next to the Long Bridge. There's two Long Bridges, actually, the one we drive on, and then there's the pedestrian bridge, which is just to the east of the driving bridge. And so we have the swim right alongside that pedestrian bridge. We start on the south side of the bridge and then swim north. This is the 28th year of the event, so we've been at it since 1996, so it's many, many years. We have typically upwards of 650 or 700 registrations. We end up with about 600 and something swimming. We encourage all types of swimmers. We kick off the safety meeting at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. And the swim starts promptly at 9. It's meant for everyone. While we have some competitive swimmers there, it's meant to be a fun community event, and we run it as such.
So around the region, let's say the Northwest, how many big open water swims are there?
Oh, there's a lot these days. There's many over in Washington, particularly. There's a couple in Montana. There's a number in Idaho. We're one of the larger events. In fact, we are consistently ranked in the top 100 open water swims in the world. There's a couple of organizations that keep track of that sort of thing. We are on many open water swim bucket lists. People come here to do the Long Bridge Swim at this point. It's a big deal. And we have, set of hand raises at the safety meeting to find out where people are from. While we have great local representation, we also have a significant number of people come from the Coeur d'Alene area, from Spokane, which seems obvious. We also have lots of people from all of our neighboring states, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and so on. The pandemic was difficult because our Canadian swimmers couldn't come down. Of course, we canceled in 2020 and 2021. Instead of having our typical 60 or 70 Canadian swimmers, we had one, but we still did
the one that snuck across the border
or something, but we still sang the Canadian national anthem, and she was in tears the whole time, as we always do both. And then last year we had a much better representation from Canada, and then we'll have at least a dozen other countries represented. In fact, a couple of years we've had winners of the overall men's or women's division won by people from faraway places. So we had a young woman win the women's division a couple years ago. She was from the UK. So it's always exciting to have people from all over. In fact, we had a family from Barcelona who came. They came for 10 years as a family to swim in the Long Bridge. They had family here, but that was their priority, was to be here Long Bridge Swim Week. So it's really fun.
So let's say you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know, maybe I should take a whack at it. What does somebody need to know in order to participate in the swim? For one thing, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of extra equipment. A pair of swimming shorts will do. Although I know that some folks do wear some neoprene, shorty type wetsuit just to retain
sure.
body heat. I don't know if that's really considered necessary.
No, it isn't. We're fortunate. Well, we always do this the first Saturday in August, and one of the reasons is that's when the lake is really pretty warm. It's almost always above 65 degrees, and it's typically right about 70. That's pretty comfortable for most people. My skinny mini daughter, who has no discernible body fat, gets cold, so she wears a wetsuit. About half the people wear wetsuits, half do not. We don't permit people to... You can wear fins, you can... do that. You will. Your time will be noted with an asterisk that you had an assist device if you're wearing fins. But we don't permit life jackets, noodles, kickboards, anything like that, because it is the Longbridge swim, not the Longbridge float. And we regard those as a safety issue because we require people to be actually able to swim, to do the swim. But you don't have to be a former NCAA, you know, ranked swimmer. It's perfectly okay to give this a shot if you aren't sure you can make it. We have a very sophisticated safety organization, including 70 or 80 sea kayakers out there, ready to help people. You can hang on to the bow of a kayak for a while to take a rest. They've got water, snacks, most importantly, words of encouragement. So you really can test it, you know, see how well you do. And an amazing number of people can get across. We do have a time limit of 2.25 hours. And we do have a rule that if you haven't gotten to the first quarter mile when you're 45 minutes in, we do ask you to allow us to pull you, because there's just no way you're going to finish. And we do have to open up, you know, the area for boat traffic, you know, at some point. So we've got a really thoughtfully organized safety mechanism to keep people safe that really allows people to try this. And this is on a lot of bucket lists. I mean, a lot of people want to do this. And we have a lot of families, you know, moms, dads, kids, you know, aunts, uncles, you know, grandmas, grandchildren. So it's really a fun thing to do, Chris, like that.
So it actually, you know, people want to challenge themselves with something that's like this. And you mentioned kayaks and you mentioned safety. Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because I know you have, it seems like, dozens of kayaks out there doing safety patrol.
We do. And many of them have been with us for 15, 20 years. So we do have a robust safety kayak group out there. They spread out along the course. A couple of them will stay with the lead swimmers, and then they spread out as the swim stretches across the 1.76 miles of the course. So eventually we'll have kayakers spaced out the entire distance. Most of them on the outside, the lake side of the swim, but a goodly number underneath the bridge to keep people from getting hung up underneath the bridge. We also have approximately 10 spotters up on the bridge watching. If they see a swim cap go under the water and they don't see it come back up, they'll raise a flag and direct a kayaker in to investigate that. We've also got a number of people out on jet skis outside the kayakers, as well as jet boats. We don't have any propellers anywhere near swimmers. Patrolling up and down so that they can, if a kayaker brings a swimmer, tired or cold swimmer out, they're then moved by a jet ski or a boat into Dog Beach. The Sheriff's Department Marine Division is a very important part of our safety network. They're preventing powered boats, the public from coming across during the event. Sheriff's Department is very helpful with communication, helping us manage traffic up on the bridge. I mean, we have about 200 people involved in safety alone on the day of the event, including the Sheriff's Department dive team, ready to go if we have somebody we can't find. Extremely important for us to have the same number of swim caps and come out that go in, as well as
always have, right?
That's right. That's right. And we moved to chip timing 7 or 8 years ago. So that's an important thing. We're keeping track of the same number of chips coming out that went in. We also manually click, to have a redundant way of counting people. We've had a couple of situations where people have exited once they've gotten to the causeway and we can't find them. And that's very problematic for us. So we really stress that at the safety meeting that, you know, we really want to account for people. But we've been very fortunate. We've run a couple people into, we do have an ambulance. We have a full-on medical tent staffed by Bonner General, Dog Beach, as well as an ambulance stage there. We've run a couple people into the hospital just to be on the safe side over the years, but we've never had a significant, beyond some people being mildly hypothermic, we've never had a significant safety issue.
So this is a time swim. Everybody has a timing chip.
That's right.
What percentage of the folks that swim are really doing it competitively, do you think, compared to those that are just swimming to fulfill the challenge of doing the swim, or maybe just going for personal best?
Well, that's a really good question. There's the people who, from a timing point of view, are actually competitive. Then there's a great number of people who are competitive in their own minds, I think. Like you and me, Chris.
Yeah.
So
I was never competitive in my own mind when I swam it there back in 2017.
Me neither. So
I, just as a point of clarification, the 80-year-old Iron Nun beat me in her time. Yeah.
Sister
Mary.
Sister. She was really impressive. What a character. And in fact, you know, Chuck, our swimmer who swam at age 90 and then 92, he had to skip the year that, you know, the pandemic. I'm really hopeful that Chuck will be back this year. He'll be 94 this year. He's amazing. You know, he came in his first year in well under an hour and a half. I mean, he beat a heck of a lot of people, and it was his first open water swim. So we have really, you know, wonderful stories like that. So to answer your question, and something we're doing differently this year, about half the swimmers want to do the water start, which means they're competitive in some way. And all kidding aside, you know, a lot of people want to have a personal, you know, personal record, PR, you know, personal best. A number of other people are really gunning to win this event. I mean, they want to at least win their age group, or they want to be overall winner. And it's not just the teenagers. I mean, we've got a lot of older swimmers who are very, very competitive. So we've got a lot of people in the water, and their time starts when the horn goes off. That's what activates their chip. Anybody else, everybody else who are still on shore, their time starts when their chip goes across the mat as they enter the water. So it's technically possible that somebody who's on shore and crosses that mat could still win the event. So it's a really nice way to organize it, and it really reduces the sharp elbows factor. And we really
because there's so many people in the water, if you were all doing a water start, right?
Yeah, that would be problematic. And so we really spread it out. We have very, very few reports of anybody swimming over anybody else, which is, as you know, is very common at triathletes and so on. And we just don't tolerate it. That's not the kind of event we want. And we have a very wide water start area, so it really works out. I do the water start every year, and it's just fun. I mean, everybody's out there yapping with each other, and it's really got a nice feeling about it. And this year, we're going to restrict the first 7 or 8 buses to water start swimmers. We're asking them when they do their packet pickup if they want to start in the water or on land, and giving them a blue bathing cap if they want to do water start. So we're going to actually take it one more level and get water start people, you know, to the site first when we move them from the high school over to the south end, to be just another little bit organized so that they don't have to, you know, fight their way to the front. Mm-hmm. So,
well, Mr. Race Director, are you going to reveal your personal best?
My personal best was 41 minutes and 36 seconds my third year that I did the swim in 2003. My first year was 2001, and I'd never been a competitive swimmer. I swam in 01 and 02, did the swim in just a tick over 57 minutes both years, and then I decided to train. And my goal was to be in the top 25. I came in 26th. Of course, you don't know what where you're going to finish.
Of course not, yeah.
But I was really happy with that time. That's, you know, pretty competitive time for the swim. I didn't come close to placing in my age group. I think I was 6th or 7th in my age group, even though I was in the top, you know, I was 26th, because my age group happens to have, a lot of the fastest swimmers in the, which is goofy. If I'd been in an age group 10, 15, 20 years younger than me, I would have won my age group, but I've never come close because there's all these old guys who are really fast. So that's sort of been a disappointment for me. But, you know, I try hard every year and never going to do it, Chris.
Well, you don't know. You hang in there long enough, and you're 94. Maybe.
But it's just fun. You know, I don't, that's, you know, but I just enjoy participating.
So I'm looking at the all-time fastest, the men's times. John Weston has the first and second fastest times in 2001 and 2003 of 33 minutes and 29 seconds is his fastest time there. You mentioned yours was 41-something. That's actually not that far off if you consider everything. And for the women, the all-time fastest time was Suzanne Simpson in 2003. Interesting thing, both of John, when he made his fastest swim, he was 45, and Suzanne, when she made hers, she was 43. So it's not just those teenagers that are speeding out there.
Right. Well, I was 45, you know, the year I was fastest.
Yeah.
I mean, so again, it's not just these 16 and 17-year-olds.
Even though they're light, they're lean, they knife through the water, those young people. Yeah.
They do.
Or so I've observed, yeah. You have mentioned, you know, you have a ton of volunteers for the safety portion of this. Do you want to admit, I know it takes a lot of volunteers just to organize this type of event, pull it off. Is there anything?
Yeah, we've got, and then we have a couple hundred people help on the actual event day. You know, people are helping with food and logistics and registration and so on. And that's been just a wonderful part of the swim. People look forward to it. I get a ton of people, you know, writing in and calling every year. Can we help out? I helped years ago or want to help again. But what really makes the event happen is our core volunteer team, many of whom have been with us for years and years and years. So we've got 10 department chairs who really own their areas and do just a superb job with that. And I'd love to have just a brief moment to kind of call them.
Yeah, give a shout
out. Do a little shout out for them. Karen McClellan's our registrar. She's just highly organized and brings her whole team in. And that's just such a meaningful part of the event. And she works very closely with Chuck Neely, who's been our timer for years now. Karen's sister, Susie, helps coordinate our t-shirts and also happens to run our swim program, which we'll talk about in a little bit, I'm sure. But Susie's been a very energetic contributor to our program for years. Donovan and Amy Levitt, husband and wife, share the responsibility for the safety program, which has just really matured into a great and very, we had to be safe to have fun. You know, we really focus on that. Another husband and wife team, Aaron and Anne-Marie Norling, run our logistics, getting the porta potties in the right place and making sure everything's set up on event day. That's a big deal. Brent and Lucy Benall, who actually produce our t-shirts and towels and do all those sorts of things, do so much more. Brent's very enthusiastic about helping with all sorts of things. Sean and Greg Prummer from Winter Ridge do all our food, which is a big deal. I mean, we go through a lot of Huckleberry ice cream after the event.
A reward for those.
That's right. Yeah. And so they bring their crew and have a big tent, and that's a real highlight after the event. Myla Houlihan has really stepped in to help us with all sorts of things like insurance and permits, and has just done a superb job. And her husband, Tom, also helps out. Gina Woodruff has helped for years with distributing prizes and awards, does a great job. Jacob Steyer took over accounting 2 years ago. Everybody knows Jacob in town, and that's been really great to have him on the team. And then, of course, I mentioned Chuck Neely, our timer's just been great. So that's our core team. I like to say organize things, knit the team together, and I then stay out of their way. It's my job. And I raise the money to make it all work.
So let's segue over to the why of the Long Bridge Swim. It actually supports a kind of an important thing for our young people to be learning, which is to swim.
Yeah. Well, yes, and it was a pretty easy transition to that. As I want to acknowledge Eric Ridgway's role in starting the swim many, many years ago. Eric really wanted it to be a fun community event, and we've tried to maintain that vibe, and Eric still helps out every year and has that, only Eric energy that he brings to the event. When he asked me to start helping in 2007, it seemed like it was such an obvious thing to develop, to have the Longbridge Swim, you know, help contribute to teaching water safety and get involved in swim lessons in our community. Nobody else really owned that. So we started a program, and within just a few years, we had most of our elementary schools participating, and now we have virtually all of them. There's a little variability each year, but what we basically do, Chris, is have virtually all of the third graders in our county participating in this water safety program, where we bring them to the Y, formerly SWAC, for this 3-day program. We start out with a water safety focus, and then try to identify kids who don't know how to swim or swim well enough and bring them back for lessons. And then we touch them again in seventh grade, bring them back in seventh grade. And of course, you know, new people have moved to town and missed the third grade. And that's been very, very satisfying. And again, Susie Miller heads that up now. And that's been marvelously successful. We've been at it for over a dozen years now. We've had many thousands of kids go through that program, and they now populate our swim team, have been very well represented in the lifeguard programs at City Beach and at the Y. And we feel like we've had a transformative effect on our community with that.
So out of those kids that take this swimming program, do you know how many of those may have never been swimming? I know swimming is really kind of a family culture thing. Some families they swim all the time. Their kids become familiar with it when they're toddlers. Others, they never touch the water.
Right. It's remarkable how many, even in a place like this with all this water. And in fact, if you'll permit me, that's why I was so passionate about launching this. There was two events many years ago where we had two high school students who drowned, Chris, in the same summer, one up on the Moyie and one in Spirit Lake. Both were 16, both boys, both good athletes. Both were with friends. Both had experiences where they just got in over their head and drowned right there. And they didn't know how to swim, and their friends didn't know what to do to help them. So there were two issues mm-hmm. there. So in doing some homework on, you know, I spent about a year trying to figure out how do we do this, what age do we, you know, so there is a lot of science behind doing this in third grade when kids are 10. You know, that's an ideal age to do this. I learned that even in a place like this with all of our water, there's a large number of kids as well as families, as you point out, who just don't have a water culture in their family. So we have an awful lot of kids who can't even put their face in the water when they come to us. We haven't captured data on what that percentage is, but I'll tell you, it's a lot. And that's where we start. You know, we start with blowing bubbles. Mm-hmm. Like they're little, you know, we have mm-hmm. them start blowing bubbles. Mm-hmm. That's where you start. Mm-hmm. And then we work up from there. That again, you know, even though some of these kids, you know, may not choose to be on the swim team, they know how to swim well enough. And in fact, our longest running program is with the special education kids who come on Mondays. We started funding that program over 12 years ago, and those kids are there once a week. And that's a big part of their lives. That's something that, again, one of those kids falls off the dock or, you know, gets in trouble, they're not going to drown, I don't think. Mm-hmm. So
an important thing. Important life skill for everybody to learn.
Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness, yeah.
Especially in this place where we do have all this water. And young people that may not know how to swim, they're with their cohort. A lot of those kids do know how to swim. They entice them into the water without any kind of training or even thought about what goes on when you have your face in the water, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Chris.
So you mentioned Eric Ridgway. Started this thing, so it started in 1995, the first swim, and Eric, who can round people up, he started it with, I was looking at the history of it, 68 swimmers that first year.
Right. Well, actually, he did it 1 year and decided it was a great idea.
Yeah.
So he rounded up 68 of his friends.
of his closest friends. Who at that time probably thought, this might be a kind of a crazy idea, but
right.
Yeah. And, but some things, I know some things have changed since then. Just organizing the event, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here in just a second. But for one thing, Dog Beach is skinnier. And then at the other end where you get in, that's a kind of a skinnier entrance there. Why don't you talk about the way these things have changed?
Sure. Well, we used to have let's talk about the entry because that's easier. When we first started, you know, the swim all those years ago, we had a great big wide path, and we really didn't ask for permission or anything else. We just clumped down there. Even though it was private property, things were just in general. Mm-hmm. People were more informal about things. But then there were a couple houses built, and now Lee and Rochelle Harden, you know, own that home. And there's about 10 feet.
adjacent.
Right. That, yeah. And they have been very, very generous with us over the last bunch of years since they've lived there. And I always use the same language that, you know, Lee and Rochelle, are you ready to have, you know, 600 or 700 of your closest friends come by on a Saturday morning? And they love it. I mean, they just have been wonderful. I just talked to Lee last week. They've been just great and supportive. So that's really worked. And we really try to be respectful. We encourage swimmers to be respectful. We're just very fortunate. I mean, it would be challenging to come up with an alternative that would work as well. And so we really appreciate them. On the north end, you're right. The Dog Beach has really had it's presented its challenges with the railroad, you know, putting in the second bridge and doing all the other work that they're doing over there. But the railroad has been great. They've been very supportive of our event. We've also had to change it logistically. We've moved, around to the causeway. It's not as easy for us. We still have the medical, tent set up over there, and we stage the ambulance on railroad property. But they've been, again, you know, handing us the keys to the gate, allowing us to, you know, be on their property. Is it optimal? No, but we work with it, and it's okay. You know, we're very fortunate.
Do you know if the railroad owns that whole beach? So when they built the new railroad bridge, they, I'd roughly took about a third of what was existing at Dog Beach there.
I don't know where the line is there. And in fact, it's always been somewhat mysterious. When we put the new, here's another subject, we try to do something to promote swimming every year that's outside of the actual event and lessons. And a number of years ago, we decided to replace the dozen pilings that run out, from Dog Beach along the causeway. And it took, I don't know, almost a year to figure out how to get a permit to replace those old rotting wooden pilings because nobody knew who had done it in the first place and couldn't figure out what agencies should. And then, nobody could, the city, the county, railroad, ITD.
They all said, talk to the other guy.
Nobody could, kind of figure it out. But we eventually got that settled, and Jim Woodward was great with Apex. They put them in for it. We bought the material, and he went out and banged them in at no cost. It was great. Again, the community finally, everybody came together and we got it done. But that whole thing is mysterious to us down there when we're doing a permit every year. Never quite sure who's in charge, but it's worked out.
All right. Well, we're not going to talk for too much longer here, but let's run through the nuts and bolts of a swim day here. And if people are listening, they get interested. How do they get signed up? And then how is it organized? I know it starts with a pre-swim get together at
high school.
The high school, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you actually take buses out to the start point, which is an important thing to know because you can't go out there and park. There's no parking.
Right.
Yeah. So run us through that.
So register online, go to longbridgeswim.org, and there's right on the homepage, there's just one click and you're at the registration for the swim if you haven't registered yet. And that will be open until Thursday, August 3rd. 11:59 p.m. So, and then there's one more opportunity to register after that, and that's at swimmer packet pickup on Friday evening, the 4th, at the high school, late afternoon, 5:30 to 7. There's packet pickup, so you can register there. And then that's it. There is no same day registration. Cannot show up. We have not had same day registration for, oh, it's 7 or 8. It might be 10 years now. Cannot show up and do that. And then swimmers must be there. If they haven't picked up their swim cap and gotten their number on their back of their hands and on their cap and so on Friday evening, they must be there by 7:30 on Saturday morning and then ready for the safety meeting at 8. Registration does pack up, and it's very challenging every year, Chris. We have, you know, one swimmer or two swimmers show up at 8 o'clock wondering, where's the registration table? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're very clear about this every year that, you know, the registration people are also swimming. Mm-hmm. And so they pack up. Mm-hmm. So it's really important for people to pay attention and show up early. Mm-hmm. And again, we have the buses that take everyone over. And including, we're happy to take spectators over. They can then walk across the bridge. And then we do run anybody who has any challenges with walking that long distance from Dog Beach back up to the gas station there. We do run a shuttle with a couple side-by-sides and so on, golf carts from Dog Beach back up to the service station after the swim. So people shouldn't feel like they're going to get stranded there, and it's, you know, often a hot day. So mm-hmm. We cover that logistically. So it's a well-oiled machine at this point. If you know, people follow directions, it goes very, very smoothly.
Mm-hmm. The key theme there: follow directions, please.
Yes,
pay attention to these times so you don't get left behind. Well, Jim Zuber-Bueller, race director for the Long Bridge Swim. So I want you to throw out anything else you want to say, but I wanted to close out with the question here. How did you wind up as race director, sir? And why would you?
Well, before I answer that, I do also want to do a shout out to all of our sponsors. They have been very supportive for years. You'll see those on our website, and of course they'll all be on our T-shirts coming out. It's a great group of people, and most of them just sign up automatically from 1 year to the next. They make it really easy for me. I describe myself as an accidental swim director. Chris, again, I didn't swim competitively. I jumped in and did the swim starting in 2001. In fact, we moved to Massachusetts for a couple of years, so 2004, 2005, and 2006, actually made it a point to come back for a week to not miss the swim. I really enjoyed it. And then Eric Ridgway was the first person I met when I moved to Sandpoint in the fall of 2000. And he told me about this swim. I've actually met him hiking on the Mineral Point Trail. So he had me, you know, as he does with people. And then a couple of years later, he just asked me if I'd be willing to help him. So I served as the assistant director for a couple of years. And then in 2013, he asked mm-hmm. if I'd be the director, and I said, sure. So
it's 10 years then.
Yeah, I think this is my 11th.
11th year. Okay.
11th yeah, year right. to be the yeah. race director. So
it was a slow entrapment.
Yeah. Yes.
By Eric Ridgway. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of years. And
again, well done, Eric.
But I'm organized. They tell me I'm pretty organized, so I think that's the reason I'm still around.
Yeah. I having taken part in this, I'll testify it is a really well-organized event, and it's a lot of fun. It is a challenge for folks that aren't, you know, don't have the super swimming mindset, but it's fun to challenge yourself, and yeah. it leads to good things, I think. Well, Jim Zuber-Bueller, director of the Long Bridge Swim, I want to say thank you for coming in today and giving us all the lowdown on it.
Thanks for having me.
And we talked about this. We were looking for a swimming song to kind of close you out here, and we came up with the swimming song. We know the title, and we know it's by Billy Parker and Doug Bond. Doug Bond's a local guy. I think if it's the same Doug Bond. And I'm going to go ahead and play that to play you out here. This is only about 3 minutes. I'll be back after that with a little bit more about what's going on in town and here at KRFY. So be back in just a moment.
Last summer I went swimming. Last summer I might have drowned. But I held my breath, I kicked my feet, and I moved my arms around. I moved my arms around.